And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 714. Continuing our team-by-team previews for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. We head over the border now, across the border, as some would say. May hopefully we make back. We'll see. But we're going to talk about another team in the AL East, a team that not too long ago was fighting for playoff contentions. Now they're just in the news for whatever reasons. We'll have to see. But the roster for fantasy still has life. Let's say that much. There's still viability there. We're going to have a Jays fan tell us whatever their viability they have in real life very shortly. That's the Toronto Blue Jays. In order to help me break all of this down is a good friend of ours, a good friend of the show, a guy that he works for Fangraphs.com. Also major man over there at Fantasy Pros. The one, the only, Joe Arrico. How we doing, my friend?
I'm always doing great when I get a chance to talk with you, man. We've done so many shows together. It's been too long. I hate to let so long go without doing a show together. But it is fantastic to talk with you, even though the subject is the Blue Jays. Should be a great time, my friend.
I appreciate you joining me. Joe has been on this parade. I think it's my third year of doing all 30 teams, and Joe's been there from the get-go, which has been much appreciated. And yeah, it's a team that when we talked the first time we did this, Joe, there was a lot of optimism with this team. Things are pretty good, and then every year it just kind of dwindles more and more, and Joe will come in the Bubba and the Bloom live feeds, and if we bring up a J on a Bloom board, it's like it's also late at night on the East Coast, so who knows, maybe a couple cocktails are thrown down. We never know with Mr. Arrico, but his feelings are let known on that. So before we get into the player analysis or discussion, I guess, for the season, what were your thoughts on the 2024 season for the Toronto Blue Jays?
It was a disaster. It was a complete disaster. I know the expectations coming in were, well, maybe they can compete and blah, blah, blah. A couple pieces here and there might be able to do. It was a disaster. Like, everybody disappointed. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., aside from that, because he had the second best season of his career, everybody else pretty much, there might be one or two small exceptions, was a disappointment. And in that kind of season, the team is obviously going to disappoint from a real life standpoint. And from a fantasy point of view, there were a lot of players who fell way short of returning their value. So it's hard to describe it in any other way, except everybody pretty much fell short of expectations in 2024. And there is some bounce back potential moving forward, but everything that could go wrong essentially did go wrong last season.
That is very, very true. Cause yeah, it wasn't too long ago. There was, you know, maybe it was a couple years ago when we first did this. If you stacked the Jays, you had one of the best fantasy lineups in baseball. And you mentioned Vladdy, and this is a guy that I've always clowned on. But in the end, he actually had a pretty serviceable fantasy season last year. One of the few on the roster, as you mentioned, as we had some disappointments. But I'm with you. There is, like I said at the start of the show, there is kind of some fantasy optimism I have based on ADP and whatnot. Just so to clarify, I don't know if you have ADP up. If not, I'm good. I got it. But I changed it from the outline behind the scenes. People love to hear this stuff. But I moved it to December 16th to today's date, recording date. So it gives us about 12 draft champions drafts, if that helps you at all. We were using December 1st at first, and that's a lot of drafts now because a bunch of degenerates out there, you folks, including us. All right, so let's kick it off at the top with Vladito, talking about him again. 30 home runs last year for the third time in his career, 103 RBIs, hit 323, which was remarkable. ADP is around 15-16 over the last 12 drafts. So you got to pay the piper if you want Vlad. How are we feeling on his contract year?
I think he is going to essentially repeat what he did last season. The projections generally, and I'm pretty projection-oriented at this point. Every year that goes by, I think I rely on them a little bit more. And we'll know more once the different systems come out. It's all been Steamer to this point. But the projections from Steamer, 33 homers, 5 steals, batting about 300. I think that is generally what you can expect out of him. The big question for me comes down to the counting stats. Will it be more so 100 and 100? Can he push like 110, 110? Or with the supporting cast around him with Will Wagner projected in the cleanup spot, will this be something closer to like 85 and 85? Because I think he's a 300 hitter. I think the 30 home runs are something that is going to, you know, we're going to see that generally every season, even in the quote unquote down years, 26, 32 home runs. So I think 30 is a good floor to set. Everything else is, I think, generally going to be about the same. It just comes down to those counting stats and whether or not Toronto will add a couple of more pieces around, maybe not at the top of the order, but a couple of supplementary pieces that will make it easier to go through that lineup and potentially turn it over a couple more times and expect it. Maybe you get Vladdy up to 220 runs in RBIs combined, but I think it's generally going to be about the same story from last year.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. Like I said, I had him in tout because he's an OBP god. Yeah. He's amazing in that format. And it's really like there's a lot of players that obviously enhance their value in OBP, but to still have 30 plus home runs, 100 RBIs in an OBP format, it escalates you quite a bit up that ladder. So big fan of Vladdy there. Where my dilemma is, and I've mentioned it on a lot of my other shows, is I'm trying to focus more on the early batting average because it's so true. It's like it just dwindles so quickly in drafts. If you don't draft it early, you're going to be playing behind the eight ball more often than not, or you're going to be stuck taking a Luis Urias, which I despise in my drafts. So Vladdy is a big plus in that format, because I agree. He might not hit 323, but 300 around there seems pretty serviceable. It's can you continue to build your roster? Like it's the Yordan approach. He's a Yordan, essentially. Do you want to get the guy with the power, the average, no speed? And you can build around that for sure. It's the Corey Seager approach, but later in the draft. So that's the only dilemma I have when I look at Vlad, but I'm at least backing up from my previous season's takes where I'm like, okay, I can understand if you want to draft him. It makes sense. This is who he is. It's cool. But just like you said, between the counting stats and then the no stolen bases, you got to plan accordingly.
At the turn there where he's going, you kind of, you don't have to, but you pair him with like a Corbin Carroll type, and that really does take care of the steals, even Julio. And that's kind of a pretty appealing combo that you probably wouldn't have been able to get last season. So I really don't mind anything about Vlad other than the potential lack of supporting cast.
Yep, that's a great point. All right, let's talk about Bo Bichette. This is a guy that's tilted many of our faces off. After three straight 20-plus home run seasons, four home runs last year. Steals have gone 25, 13, 5, and 5. Obviously was hurt a lot of 2024. His average just plummeted. Injury could be a part of that. Another guy rumored to be getting traded and or just free agent next year, gone. The difference between previous seasons, though, Joe, ADP's around 140, where in the past you had to pay, like, let's say, a fourth-round, fifth-round pick. You can wait. This is past round 10 in a 12-team league, almost round 10, and it's round 9 in a 15. So what are your thoughts on Bo Bichette? Because with the price tag, I'm at least open to the discussion now.
Yeah, I haven't made any secret about my love of Bo over the years, but specifically this year with the price coming down the way it did, I've heard two schools of thought on it. Some people look at the injuries and they think it's more of a pattern going back to 2023, and you could argue that it is. I mean, if you look at the last couple of seasons, he's injured just about everything he can. His finger, his calf, his forearm, he had neck spasms, the quad, knee, thumb, all kinds of things were ailing him over the last couple of seasons. Now, that calf, three different times where it was bothering him this past season is a bit of a concern. My thought process behind it is we have a 26-year-old who was one of the elite hitters in the game from the time that he came up all through 2023. An injury plagued down season has now dropped his price more than 100 picks, and I want to jump back in on that with the hope that a lot of his troubles were just he couldn't stay on the field. He dealt with some injuries, but at his age, I don't know that it's a situation like a lot of people have said where he's done. He's cooked. He's going to be Tim Anderson. He's going to be Javi Baez. I don't think we're anywhere close to that. He's younger than those guys were when they fell off their cliffs. I think with Bo, the talent is still there for him to potentially hit 300, for him to hit 20 home runs. The steals are probably not coming back, not to the way they were in 2021 and even probably 2022. He's likely a single-digit stolen base guy, but if you're giving me 20 homers and hitting 280 or so, well past when a lot of those elite shortstops are going, he's like the 15th shortstop off the board, I'm taking it every single time. And I've done 8 drafts and I have him on 4 or 5 teams. So, you know, the bias is in there to some extent, but I'm expecting a big turnaround for Bo in 2025.
Yeah, and what you said there, a big part for me is, I'm going to piss people off by the end of this draft season. 280 batting average in round 10, that is outstanding. Like, you just don't find a lot of that right there. So based on how you're building your team, or if you want to add batting average, because it just starts dropping off rapidly the farther down you go. Like, you'll get good 2 to 3 category guys. You're not going to find a lot of batting average, though. That's just a thing. Doing bloom boards and stuff stands out in a big way, seeing those reds on there. So I'm with you on that, and I'm also starting to agree that I don't see a lot of speed. So my question for you then, and I know what you've done in drafts, but I just want to have the discussion for the listeners. Yeah. For me, I'm aggressive at shortstop because, you know, after Vlad, after Bo, there's maybe a couple more guys, and then it really starts getting kind of murky. So I prefer Bo to be like my middle infielder, not my shortstop. Are you good with Bo being your shortstop in a 15-team league?
I personally am. Just looking at my shortstop shares, I have three Trey Turner teams. I have a Bobby Witt Jr. team, and I have a Gunnar Henderson team. So I generally do have already a shortstop secure there, and then Bo has been the middle. But in a couple of different drafts, he has also served as the starting shortstop. It's not ideal because then who are you putting in middle infield? In those cases, a couple times it was Mason Winn, Jose Caballero, J.P. Crawford in one draft, which I don't know how I feel about that one necessarily. But yeah, that's kind of the point you're making, that once you let it fall to a certain point, you are going to be lacking at middle infield. In a 15-team league, you are going to be lacking somewhere. If I can avoid it at the middle infield, then I will if I can. If I can take one of those elite shortstops, I will. But if I do miss out, or if it just happens to be that wherever I am in the draft, I've missed out on a shortstop run, I do take comfort in the fact that I can take Bo Bichette around pick 150 and, you know, probably get a decent batting average, like you said. Everything else should be pretty solid. And I do think we're going to essentially see Bo go back to, like, you know, what he did 2 years ago, essentially. You're going to see 20 homers. You're going to see a 306 average, five steals, something along what he did in 2023. So I don't mind him as a starting shortstop. In a perfect world, he is the middle infielder, though.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. That's why I just wanted to have that little discussion before we moved on to the next player. And that is the 35-year-old leadoff hitter, George Springer, who I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, but he just does it, keeps doing it. 19 homers, 16 steals last year. Now the 220 average, not ideal. It's kind of a trend in Toronto outside of Vlad, honestly. But the dude went 20-20 the year before. He's had multiple 20 home run seasons. He's stolen 14 or more bags in three straight years. Like, this George Springer is interesting. Again, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, but Joe, his ADP is around 250 over the last few weeks, which is very appetizing.
Yeah, especially in five outfielder leagues. Now, if you are somebody who's playing in a 12-team Yahoo league with three outfielders, I think George Springer is kind of borderline. Maybe he gets drafted, maybe he doesn't. A lot of people drafting right now are doing NFBC leagues where there are five outfielders, and I think as a fourth or fifth outfielder, he's totally serviceable. But at the same time, last season was not very good for him. If you look at month-by-month stats, the batting average specifically, 211 in April, 205 in May, 226 in June. The one month that was redeemable was July at 274, but then August, 165, September, October, 247. The batting average is brutal, and that's something that I think, you know, if you're in an OBP league, it doesn't hurt you quite as much because he still does walk quite a bit. But if he's going to hit 220 or 230, that's a huge, huge concern for me. And maybe it shouldn't be considering where he's being drafted, but that's not the only concern. The hard hit rate has gone down over the last couple of years, 42 down to 39, down to 37. I just, when I look at him at age 35, expecting him to do much more than he did last season, I think is asking quite a bit, because he has been steadily declining over the last several years. Even if it just WRC plus, every year from 2019 onward, he has dropped in that category quite significantly from 22 to 23, where it went from 133 down to 104. So I could go all over the place with George Springer and talk about the various concerns. Essentially, everything is kind of concerning. The only thing that makes him redeemable right now is the draft price being so low. So as a fourth or fifth outfielder, I'm totally fine with it. Expecting a lot out of him at this age is probably not too wise, though.
Yeah, I love the ADP. It's like, I feel like I'm going to finally buy in, and now it's like the age is going to get him. But hey, at the price, you could drop that and move on type situation. A place where I have him a lot, you mentioned the OBP. I've been drafting him a ton in underdog as like my sixth and seventh outfielders. Like, he's priced so nicely there and fits that mold very, very well. All right, a player you mentioned earlier, and a player that I look at every draft champions draft I do and go, why do I want to draft this guy besides roster resource has him batting cleanup, is Will Wagner, who, yes, hit 305 last year in 24 games. He hit 315 in the minors as well. I couldn't even read for a minute there. But he's shown good hit tools throughout the minors, but the power speed does not look very appetizing to me. ADP is close to 500. So what are your thoughts on Will Wagner, the Jays' potential cleanup hitter?
God, what a statement, Mike. Jesus, Bubba. It's so brutal. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he ends up as the cleanup hitter. I think maybe you get some reps there if things go worst case and Toronto can't add another bat, a Santander or something. But I think there are a couple reasons why he is being drafted where he is. Part of it is that roster resource, but also we're talking about steamer projections. He's projected for a 117 WRC plus, which
pretty good
for considering everything, considering he's going around pick 600, like that is phenomenal. But again, like I mentioned earlier, we're looking at one projection system. Mm-hmm. Once Derek Cardi has the bat out, Will Wagner,
it's going to be very soon.
It's going to be soon. Yeah. I think Ariel said ATC's in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to have more systems. Derek tends to throw a lot of cold water on these younger players without a lot of experience. So Will Wagner's projected WRC plus by the bat will probably be like 94 or something. And then we're going to see him come all the way down in terms of people drafting him, in terms of people's expectations, because it'll be kind of leveled out a little bit. In terms of what I expect, I think he can be a serviceable strong side platoon bat, but I think, you know, 117 WRC plus would be pretty exceptional for him if you're pacing out what he's projected for, because it's only over 65 games as well. Steamer's only projecting 65 games. You boost that, even just double it. Let's say he has 130 games, mostly a full-time role. You already alluded to this. That would put him on pace for 10 homers and 4 stolen bases. So not a lot to write home about there, but where he's going in drafts, I mean, it doesn't really matter so much if he is giving you, like, you don't need a ton from him to be profitable at that range. It would be more so like a plug and play type of guy. If you're seeing Toronto's got 7 righties in a week and he's likely to play every game, then you put him into your lineup there. I think that he's fine. But if we're looking at this from a real life point of view as a cleanup hitter, it's atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious if Toronto doesn't bring in a Santander or make a trade for another bat that can go behind Bo and Vladdy. Because another thing is, if there's no protection behind Vladdy, you're going to see him walk 150 times this year, because no one's going to pitch to him when Will Wagner's right behind him. So Toronto needs to improve on this spot, but if they don't, I think Will Wagner can be okay, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, no, okay, that's a little more reassuring. Because I look at him every time in drafts going, what am I doing here? But he's so late, and most of those guys don't have a starting gig, and he might have one. So
yeah, that's the thing.
It's appealing for sure. What is appealing to me this year is Alejandro Kirk, because every year we talk, it's always Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen splitting time. What are we going to do? All these things. Yeah. Well, it's the Alejandro Kirk show for now, unless things change. He's played at least 100 games in all 3 seasons. Power's really never developed what we want it to be, but the batting average has been serviceable, especially for a catcher 2 or even catcher 3 at ADP of around 280. So what are your thoughts on Kirk as it's his first year to kind of just run with the job if he can't?
Yeah, I want to be more interested. I mean, if you guys have listened to the show the last couple of years or seen me commenting on stuff or seen any of my own content, like, I've been an Alejandro Kirk fan. The projections are always good. And even this year, I mean, a 120 WRC plus projection is very solid. It's among the better projections for catchers. But I think part of me doesn't really buy it based on the last couple seasons. Maybe they're still taking too much from 2023. I know the projections tend to go, or excuse me, from 2022. Projections tend to go on like a 3-year curve, valuing the most recent sample more so than the previous ones. But there's not really any reason to project him to be 20% better than league average, other than looking back and saying, look what he did 2 years ago. And he hasn't been that same guy over the last 2 years. He doesn't hit the ball terribly hard. He doesn't lift the ball in the air a lot at all. I mean, he hit 5 home runs in 103 games. I think as a C2, as like a mid-end C2, he's probably like, I don't know, 23 to 25 range for catchers, at least in my own rankings, somewhere in that range. I think he's fine as your second catcher, but I also don't think he's going to meet these projections. I think that they're a little bit too lofty. They're projecting, like, it's 103 games, so let's say he does play 110 or 115, whatever. I don't think he's hitting 15 home runs. I think maybe he can hit 270, 260 or so, which is, like we've mentioned a few times now, batting average late in drafts from your catcher is very valuable. But he's not somebody that I'm like jumping ADP on or anything. If I happen to fall to him, or if he happens to fall to me as my second catcher, that's fine. But not a huge, huge target for me this year, for the first time in a couple of years, actually.
Yeah, no, you've been the big Alejandro Kirk man, that's for sure. But yeah, I don't mind him if I just completely whiff on catcher, which doesn't happen often. Or as my, if I go early catcher 3, I'll go that route just because I know, barring injury, he's going to play a lot. Yeah. But yeah, he doesn't do a ton statistically to jump off the page. compared to some other guys. Like at catcher three, it's almost like, do you take the boring Kirk just for playing time, or do you go with one of these young guys that might get a chance in DCs? And that's where it gets them a little more interesting.
Big catcher two guy for me has been your guy, Patrick Bailey. I mean, a lot of the time I fall on Patrick Bailey. I think he's going to play a lot. The glove will keep him on the field. I mean, I'm not going to derail this into a Giants conversation, but between the two of them, I generally do go Patrick Bailey as the second catcher. I have a few times so far anyway.
I would do that as well. I think there's more of a fantasy ceiling there. That's for sure. All right. New Toronto Blue Jay, because the Blue Jays care about defense this year, is Andrés Giménez, who got traded from the Cleveland Guardians. I have always liked Giménez because the dude outside of last year, he's been a 15 home run guy, got 30 steals last year for the second straight year, 20 or more for three straight, hit 252, basically the same back-to-back years. So the power is a question, but even if he goes 10-30 with a 250 average, doesn't crush you by any means, especially with an ADP of 175. I know most Blue Jay fans were not excited about this trade, Joe. So tell us if we should be or shouldn't be, at least for fantasy.
I was chiefly among those Blue Jay fans who immediately emotionally was tweeting and saying, what the hell? Like, what are we doing? We need offense. Horwitz looked like he was not a lifesaver or anything, but a very solid, competent offensive player. Whereas Giménez, the steals are nice. He stole 30, 30, and 20 each of the last 3 years, but I think that's partly an organizational thing too. Cleveland is a lot more willing to steal than Toronto. Toronto, I tweeted it at the time, and I don't have it in front of me, but Toronto and Cleveland were on the opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of stealing bases last year. Cleveland was a top 10 or so team. This is rough estimates off the top of my head, and Toronto was like bottom 5 or 7 in terms of stolen bases. So that 30 very likely goes into the mid-20 range. He's batting in the middle of the order, probably. I don't see him at the top of the order, given his sub-300 on-base percentage. So the speed is the first thing, because that's what everybody's going to look at, as he's a big speed guy. I can, you know, take the Vladdies and the Jordans earlier and then take Andrés Giménez and make up for that. But if that's 20 steals instead of 30, that is a huge difference. We've already talked about the lack of thump in the lineup. So the counting stats, especially batting wherever he ends up, fifth, sixth, seventh in this order, can't really imagine he goes too far above 60 some odd runs and RBIs. And then the power as well. The barrel rate has gone from 6.2 to 5.5 to 2.8%. Hard hit from 37 down to 28% over the last 3 years. I do think that 2022, where he had a 141 WRC plus 6-win season, I think that was the anomaly. And we're going to look back on that as the year that it was very hard for him to repeat. Can he get the power back? Potentially. In a ballpark like Toronto, that's not exactly a strong power park, considering his profile. I think we're looking at 8 home runs, maybe 25 steals, and then he hits maybe 250, 260 if we're lucky, but not a game changer for the Blue Jays if you're not taking an early second baseman. And part of what I do at Fangraphs is I'm in charge of the second base rankings. I've hammered it that you should take an early second baseman this year. The elite tier is elite. And then obviously great analysis, Joe. The elite tier is elite. After that, it really falls off. So if I'm ending up with Giménez, I'm not terribly happy about it. I do think that we're going to continue to see him maybe not flounder, but I think that he's maybe a league average bat if Toronto's lucky this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, just, I know people were so bummed on his season last year. Maybe this is more of a detriment to the position, but he still finished 11th on the Fangraphs player rater in the 12 team league at second base. So he's worth like $7.30. So like, people probably paid more for him than that in a league. So he didn't get you the return you wanted, but in the end, I guess finished okay. But yeah, it was a rough go for sure. Ernie Clement, starting third baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays, 12 homers, 12 steals last year, hitting 263 over 139 games. Really, really better than I expected. And the plate discipline strikeout wise is pretty darn good. ADP is 388. Joe, how are we feeling on Ernie Clement? Because I know everyone's rumored that for Alex Bregman, but Bregman is in the Toronto Blue Jays conversation still, I believe.
We'll see. I don't expect it. I mean, at this point, I've been conditioned not to expect anything good. You know, if we sign Eric Lauer or something, it's like, oh, we got Eric. You know, it's just, I'm not expecting big things. So I think Ernie Clement is probably going to be the guy who starts at third. Really solid defensive metrics. I mean, if you're looking at the advanced fielding on Fangraphs, he had 9 defensive runs saved at third, 3 outs above average. At short, he was 6 defensive runs saved, 4 outs above average. So he's a very, very good defensive player, and he is eligible at third and short on NFBC. So those are two very good things. The projections, I don't understand why they would only put him down for 89 games. even if Toronto does make a move, I still feel like Ernie Clement probably does play fairly regularly, at least to the point where he's not a part-time player. Good plate skills. Drawing a walk is not exactly a strong suit, though. He walked 11 times in 139 games, so don't expect too much on-base juice, but he can hit for a decent batting average, you know, 263 average. It was a 257 XBA. Not much in the way of power really at all. 3.8 barrel rate, 24 on the hard hit. He did run into a couple, but I don't know that we're going to see double-digit homers again from him. I think he's probably like a 10 home run, 10 stolen base guy who can give you some decent batting average in a draft champions format. And he's going at pick 388 with the dual eligibility. I think he's a solid pick, somebody who's probably going to play more than most players going around pick 400. So I do like him, but again, temper your expectations. He's not going to be a league winner or anything like that, but there are going to be certain weeks where you probably get some good production out of him.
Yeah, especially that ADP becomes very, very appealing. Like I said, the more I looked at him, I was kind of surprised of how well he actually played last season. I'm going to group these two together. You can discuss them however you choose. And that is Nathan Lukes. I'm mispronouncing that. His ADP is 740. And they got Joey Loperfido, ADP of 498. Loperfido came over in the Astros trade last year, had like a week or two where we thought he was God again and then disappeared. And then you had Lukes, and maybe it's Luke, as I've heard many ways of saying it. Not bad in a small sample with Toronto. So there's your center fielder and your left fielder potentially. How are we viewing those guys?
I believe it's pronounced Lucas, but okay, I'm not 100% sure about that one. Don't hold me to it. I think, again, he's okay. I mean, what he did last year was actually very good, considering the small sample size. 22 games, he hit 303, 132 WRC plus. He walked more than he struck out. There was a lot of positives. Expecting that over the course of a full season for a guy who is already 30 years old. He's going to turn 31 during the course of the season. Not sure how much he actually ends up playing. I think that Lucas is in here as a placeholder for Dalton Varshow, who is going to come back potentially by opening day. We're not 100% sure on the timeline, but Lucas is going to be a guy who likely spends more time on the bench than in the field this year, assuming that, you know, the health bug doesn't, or the injury bug doesn't come around too harshly. So I think once Varshow comes in, Lucas is back to the bench, and he's going at pick 740. He's like a last round DC pick. Don't have any real problem there, but not somebody that I would be going out of my way to target necessarily. Loperfido, I think, is somebody that is not going to be terribly interesting to me. He just strikes out way too much. Like a 36% strikeout rate is a little bit hard to come around from. 17% swinging strike, so it's not like he was just unlucky. He earned those strikeouts. Yep. Doesn't get on base a ton outside of the swing and miss problems, only a 5% walk rate. There is some potential power speed juice here. He might be a guy who can go low double digit homers and steals in a full season where he can give you like 12 and 13, something like that, but not somebody that I'm going to be, again, going out of my way to target. What is his ADP? About 500. So it's reasonable, but I don't think there's really a lot of juice here. Unless you're super desperate for outfield, I don't think I'm going to land on him very often.
Yeah, I've passed on him a few times. Like, there's the prospect pedigree everyone was talking about. So there's hope there, but I don't know. Didn't see much. Like I said, he earned the strikeouts last year. And it is Lucas. I looked that up. So, yes, Lucas is correct on that. You mentioned Dalton Varsho. His ADP is 374. I just want to ask you about him real quick because I have been drafting him in underdogs late because no one else wants to, and he gets on base a ton. His OBP is great, but his batting average has been atrocious the last few years. But I did want to highlight 10 or more steals in three straight years, 18 or more home runs in three straight years. So it's one of those, not a bad power and speed skill set at an ADP of 374. It's just need to hope for a little more batting average. So what do you think when you look at a guy like Dalton Varsho, especially if he's coming back to start the season potentially?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about when he'll be back, but I don't think he'll, even if he doesn't start the year, I think he'll be back in April. So I think part of the reason why he's going so low, part of it is because he disappointed last year for sure, but also because there's that uncertainty when you click on his name that he's got the little red circle or whatever beside him. So he's getting pushed down a little bit because of that. I think that it's come down too far, probably. Like, he could still give you 20 home runs. He can still probably steal 10 to 15 bases. As long as you know you're not getting batting average, and you're not. Like, his high was 246. Is a career 225 hitter. That's probably where you're going to land with him. But as somebody who is going in the range of like a sixth or seventh outfielder, I think it's really reasonable, actually. You know, the counting stats, like we mentioned with everybody, probably not going to be great. But if you are able to get 20 and 10, around pick 400, then it's hard to say no to that.
Yep, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because it seems like everybody kind of overlooks him or just kind of pushes him away because of never lived up to the expectations, one would say. Then overall statistics aren't horrible, all things considered, of where you're drafting him at. So I wanted to bring that up. Any other hitters you wanted to discuss? We don't have to, but like, you know, everyone's favorite Davis Schneider platoon. There's some other options potentially, but no one that jumps out to me, but you know the team better than I do.
Davis Schneider was one of my, in my time doing fantasy content, one of my biggest misses. I thought that he was going to be a big thing. The barrel rates were great, but he just swings and misses too much. I don't think there's really much there. Alan Roden is somebody I thought I'd bring up. He is one of the top prospects. There's one other prospect we'll get to in a second, but Alan Roden really had a fantastic year last year. Split between double A, split between double A and triple A, mostly a triple A, 16 homers, 14 steals with a .293 average and a .136 WRC plus, .865 OPS. It was really, really solid stuff from Roden. He's an outfielder, and Toronto's outfield right now looks not great, as we've just gone over. So there's a good chance that he comes up at some point this season. Projections have him. A lot of the time with Steamer, they don't project full playing time for these prospects, but a .110 WRC plus is really, really promising. And the other guy, I think, in terms of the minor league system that is worth mentioning, at least to some degree, is Aurelbis Martinez.
Yep.
Coming off of his PED suspension, it always makes me a little nervous. I know he had some, you know, he had a bad ham sandwich or some kind of excuse like that, but you never really know, right? So until he gets back on the field, I don't know if he is going to be that guy that we thought a couple of years ago. Could he be a 30 home run bat? I don't really know. But if you are in draft rooms, Aurelbis is going a pick 550 on average, 540, 550. So I don't mind taking a stab on him there. But I'm also not really sure what he is, like every other player that comes back from a PED suspension at a young age. So those are kind of the two that could have some interest from the minor leagues. I know Addison Barger has had a couple of cups of coffee. Mm-hmm. Not really gone so well for him. He's another guy who might get some playing time, but we're really going to the bottom of the barrel here. I don't think any of these guys do too much for fantasy, but if I were to bet on any of them, it'd be Alan Roden. I think that he could potentially come up and be a bit of a difference maker in the summer.
Love it. Love it. That's a name I have not heard much about, so I like that quite a bit. Let's go to the mound here, and we're going to start with the guy that you love and I had lots of shares of last year as well. Kevin Gausman. Still threw 180 innings, which is pretty darn good. Yeah. Ratios, all things considered, still not that bad. 3.83 ERA, 1.22 whip. You just want better for where you drafted him. The part that was the major bummer, strikeouts just fell off the map. He was pitching to so much contact. Joe, what are we thinking this year? ADP is 164, so you're not paying a premium. And like I said, I look at it, just no, he wasn't getting swings and misses. And that's obviously a big part of being a good fantasy pitcher. So what are we thinking for 2025?
I think that people might have done a bit of an overcorrection on him. I had him as a top 10 pitcher, top 5 pitcher, I think, actually, last year going into the season. And now I've got him in the 40s. But I've also seen some people who've put him way down in like the 60s and 70s. And I think that's where we maybe overreact a little bit. Don't get me wrong. It was bad. And it was trending in a bad direction for the last couple of seasons. But he also entered the year with shoulder fatigue. And I think that's something, I don't know how much it impacted him, but a little bit of a false start to the season probably impacted him to some extent. If you do look at the splits, things did get a bit better as the year went on for him. First half ERA was 450, second half was 292. Some of the numbers under the surface weren't quite as good as that 292 suggests in the second half, but still he did get quite a bit better. But I think in terms of the strikeouts, I don't know that they're coming back, at least not to where they were. If you look back when he was in your neck of the woods, it was 32%, 29, 28, 31. That strikeout rate dropped to 21% this year, and it wasn't just bad luck. The swinging strike rate has gone from 15 to 12.5 to 10.5 the last 3 years. So he's not getting those whiffs anymore. It does come down to the slider, or excuse me, to the splitter. We've heard so much about how volatile that pitch is, and it just wasn't really working for him last year. You can see it if you look at stuff numbers, if you look at whiff numbers, all of it. The splitter, which is the most volatile pitch in baseball, probably just didn't work for him last season. Can he get back to that? Potentially, but I do think that the price drop is warranted in terms of ADP. I think that he should be considered like a 40-ish range starting pitcher. At 163, I have a couple shares. But I'm also not expecting Kevin Gausman to bounce back into the top 10 starting pitchers. I think that he can potentially be a top 25, 30 guy if things break right. but I think his days of being an elite Cy Young contender are probably in the rear view.
And I think we're on the same page. I think some of the overcorrection is a little wild, but I am concerned he's not going to make it back to the guy we wanted him to be a few years ago. So I think I'm with you there, because like I said when I introduced him, is outside of the strikeout slash swing and miss, the overall numbers aren't horrible, especially if he gives you that with the ADP he has now, you're not in the end of the world. And that's a pretty sweet situation to be in. So we'll see. When a splitter disappears, it's always concerning, but I'm a bit optimistic like you are as well.
He threw the same number of innings, just about. It was a difference of 4 innings between 2023 and 2024, and he lost about 70 strikeouts. So big, big concern. I know we talk about percentages, but when you look at the raw numbers, it also just kind of smacks you in the face that he lost 70 strikeouts in the same number of innings.
Yep, cost you a lot when you took him early last year, because trust me, I did.
Yeah, this guy.
All right, Jose Barrios, just one of the most consistent arms in baseball. He had his one flutter in 2022, but other than that, back on track the last 2 years, just innings eating machine, mediocre strikeout arm. You know that going into it, but ratios are consistent. You almost know what you're signing up for. He's going to be 31, so we'll see. But ADP of 238, like, I can't get it enough of a guy like Barrios to just anchor a fantasy team. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I don't mind him at all at that price. And I think the price needed to be about in that range after last season, because it was a bit of a deceitful campaign for him. Like, he was good. But he had that 1.44 ERA in April. Jose Barrios, a lot of people probably forgot this, was the pitcher of the month for the American League in April. And then after that, the ERAs by month, 4.70, 4.85, 6.08. And then he did correct a little bit in the second half, 2.50, 3.68 to finish out the season. But he is a little bit of a wild card, I think. He always outperforms his ERA estimators, and there are some pitchers that just tend to do that. Jose Urquidy in Houston did that for years. Every year, he would be a 3.6 ERA and a 4.6 FIP, and I would want to fade him. Barrios is kind of the same thing, not quite as drastic. It's like a 4.72 FIP, 4.25 xFIP, and his Sierra came in at 4.33. But I think that there's maybe something that doesn't get captured in certain pitchers in those estimators. He might be one of them, but I think generally speaking, he's a high threes, low fours ERA guy. I think the projected 4.26 is maybe a little bit high, but that's generally where you're going to find him. Not a lot of strikeouts. He actually used to be a decent strikeout pitcher, 25, 23, 25, 26%, but the last 3 years, sub 20 in two of them. So that's something you have to take into account a little bit if you're lacking in strikeouts. Let's say you took Logan Webb and you have George Kirby earlier in your draft and you need to kind of supplement. Barrios probably isn't the best guy to target there, but I do think that he is a fine mid-round SP 5 or 6 probably, depending on how you've constructed your team. Somewhere in that range, I think he's okay. But I think some people may look at the ERAs and say 3.6, 3.65, he's great, and I think they may overrate him because of that. The numbers under the surface are okay, but they're not suggesting that he should be quite that good. But like I said, maybe that is just something that the numbers are failing to capture. He's just not somebody that I actively target. If I end up with him, then I'm okay with it, but he's not somebody that I'm jumping around to get Barrios because I think he's super special. I think he's fine, but I'm not going overboard.
Yeah, that's fair. Yes, I'm not running into a draft room having him as my SP5 or whatever I have to get, but yeah. If things dictate, then I'm on board and willing to do it. Yeah. Now, a guy that used to be Mr. Consistent and jumped the shark last year was Chris Bassitt. Strikeouts are still kind of in line. He got you innings, 171 innings. Ratios off the rails for Chris Bassitt standards. Still not horrible ratios, all things considered. ADP's 358 right now. So, again, not a premium. I believe he's a free agent after this year, so maybe he's pitching for one last deal. How are we feeling on Chris Bassitt?
I'm not sure what that deal is going to look like if he doesn't get the command back, because that was a huge, huge thing for him really throughout his prime. And his prime has been fantastic. If you sort by all pitchers from 2018 through to 2023, he's among the better arms in terms of ERA, in terms of a lot of things. But this past season, I think the big thing was that walk rate that had been in the 6-7% range. It jumped up to above 9%. And because of it, the whip was 1.46. Like that, you can't do anything with that. That is an absolute killer. Will it be better than that next season? Potentially. It's projected at a 1.30. But at his age, where he's going to be 36 years old before he throws a major league pitch this year, I don't really know how much to expect from him anymore. I think considering the price has come down the way it has, I don't mind him as a reserve round pitcher. Maybe he ends up as like your eighth starting pitcher or something like that. It's hard to be too upset there, but that's kind of the range where I'm looking for those upside plays. And without having, I just have Toronto sorted on the ADP here. Like, I think he's generally going in the same kind of range as like the Festas of the world, the DJ Hertzes of the world, some guys with a little bit more upside. And generally speaking, that's kind of what I'm aiming for there. He doesn't give you that same kind of stability. So in previous years where you take Bass and think I can write the numbers down in pen, I know that he's going to give me a 3.5 ERA and the whip's going to be like 115. I have no real idea what those numbers are going to look like this year. So without that certainty in the back of my mind that I am getting X production from him, I don't really see him as somebody that I want to be targeting. If he ends up as my eighth or ninth starting pitcher, I'm not going to be too upset about it. But again, another guy I'm not going out of my way to take. Kind of a common theme with the Blue Jays. Yes. Don't take Blue Jays.
I'm sensing a pattern here. Yeah, guys like Grant Holmes, Jose Soriano going right in front of him. Brady Singer, depends how you feel there. Reed Detmers, Kyle Harrison, David Peterson. Those are some right next to him. And then some of the other ones you mentioned going a little farther behind that as well. So
behind,
yeah,
it's
tricky. All right, a guy that basically came out of nowhere in my eyes, because I didn't know a ton about him, Bowden Francis. 103 innings pitched last year, 13 starts. He pitched out of the pen prior to that. 3.3 ERA, the whip of 0.93. Strikeouts, not his bag, but just pitching and pitching well was the thing. Nearly two no-hitters. Dude was really, really strong. So I want strikeout guys early, and I know that sounds bad when I'm talking about Barrios and others, but I'm saying early because Francis's ADP is 206. He's gone as high as 182. So you're getting him. Still could be like your SP4, 5, maybe 6, depending on how you draft. But how are you feeling about Bowden Francis?
I think that he was really lucky. I mean, it was amazing to watch, first of all, in Toronto. Like almost two no-hitters. We've had one no-hitter in the team's history, and it was before I was born. It was Dave Steeb back in the early 90s. So I've never actually seen a Blue Jay throw a no-hitter. This was one of the most exciting parts of the season for really everybody, because it was, if you look at statistically from the start of that run to the end of it, it was one of the best starting pitcher runs, I think, in Major League history in terms of whip, in terms of base runners, in terms of a lot of things. But it was also very lucky. I think Bowden Francis was incredibly lucky if you look at his splits as a starter versus as a reliever. So as a starter, 20% strikeout minus walk rate, 0.75 whip. Just unbelievable stuff. He had a 421 FIP, 392 XFIP. Mm-hmm. But the big things that stand out, he had a 173 BABIP as a starter, and he stranded 85% of base runners.
Oof.
So I see those two things, and it's like, we look at enough stats to know those aren't going to stick, right? Most, even if you're an elite pitcher, you're not going to have those numbers. But for somebody like Bowden Francis, who does kind of struggle to get whiffs at the best of times, I mean, his swinging strike is 10%. You're looking at a relatively average pitcher, a 98 stuff plus. I mean, there's a couple of decent pitches in there. But I think he just benefited from a fantastic run where he had just charmed luck for 7 or 8 starts. And now the price has gotten a little bit out of hand. I'm not going to fault people for thinking that he can maybe maintain that. But I also think that if you're looking at the pitchers that he's going around, and like you said, 206 ADP, he's going ahead of Tanner Houck. He's going ahead of Clark Schmidt. He's going ahead of Brandon Woodruff, Drew Rasmussen. Yep. There's a lot of talented arms that are going beyond him that I'm quite a bit more interested in. So throughout my whatever 8 or 9 drafts so far, I have no Bowden Francis, and I don't expect to end up with any either.
Me too. I was pretty much walk right past him in a draft room. Not on my things to do. And you mentioned a lot of the underlying metrics that definitely stand out as maybe lucky as well, one would say. All right, Yariel Rodriguez, a guy I was optimistic on just because of the reports out of Cuba. You know, the strikeouts and all the skills and this and that. Control is an issue. Innings were an issue. Health was an issue. In 2024, a lot of things did not go his direction. Coming out, looks like he's the number 5 for now in Toronto. ADP is 463, and that seems interesting if they will utilize him. I just don't know how they're going to utilize him, Joe. So what are we thinking on Yariel Rodriguez?
As of today, he should slot in as the 5th starter. There's not really a viable other option there. But I don't know that that necessarily means I want to draft him. So odds are he starts some games and then probably ends up in the pen at some point, I think, based on his skill set. The slider is good. The slider is very good. Every other pitch is kind of well below average. The stuff is 97, location 97, pitching plus is 97. The walk rate at 10.9% is a problem, especially when it's coming with a 23% strikeout rate and a 10% swinging strike rate. You're not projecting a lot of strikeouts. With this Toronto team, you're not projecting a lot of wins. The ratios last year were not good, and they're projected to be kind of 132 whip, 407 ERA is not bad. But if it's coming with that kind of whip, no strikeouts, and very little win opportunity, I think he's okay as like a 10th starting pitcher on your team. But I wouldn't be surprised if Yariel Rodriguez is somebody that we've kind of forgotten about by this time next year as somebody who's like a middle reliever. Hopefully Toronto brings in another starter and then they don't have to really worry about Rodriguez. But another guy I haven't landed on in any drafts, I just think that there are too many ways this can go wrong for him. Either Toronto signs somebody or he just bottoms out. That make me kind of just really cautious about drafting him.
Good to know. I haven't drafted him this year, but I know I had a lot of fab shares last year. I was very intrigued on what could come from Yariel Rodriguez. Going to the bullpen, they the Jays signed Jimmy Garcia this offseason. He's been there before. Injuries have been a concern, but good back-end guy. They have Chad Green. Right now, if you look at Jimmy Garcia, his ADP is 406, if that's something you're into, which could be very enticing. And if you look at Chad Green, his ADP is 302. And as of the morning of this recording, the Jays are interested in a discussion with Carlos Estevez. We'll see how that goes. So how are you seeing this bullpen situation playing out?
It's mid. And Estevez is more of the same. So as of today, I think Yimi Garcia is probably the guy. If a save opportunity comes up on opening day, I think it probably should be and will be Yimi Garcia. His numbers last year, really the last 2 years, were very good. 3.46 ERA in 2024. We're looking at a 24% strikeout minus walk rate. His whip was 0.9, 165 batting average against. He was fantastic. Now, he did benefit from a low BABIP, but as a reliever, it's hard to really read into that as much. He was just very good. Really, really excellent stuff from Yimi Garcia. And we kind of got Jonathan Clase from the Mariners for free, so we'll take that one because we traded him to the Mariners, and I think there was another piece in there, and then just signed him back. So, you know, we'll take that, absolutely. Chad Green ended up with, I think, more saves than any other Blue Jay last year, 17 of them. But he also, again, talking about luck, did get pretty lucky. 3.21 ERA, but the estimators, 4.29 on the FIP, 4.44 on the expected FIP. 3.82 Sierra is not as bad, but we're talking about a guy who doesn't strike anybody out. 21% strikeout rate. He used to be known as a reliever who could come in there and give you that 25 to 30% strikeout rate, even well above 30 and even, hell, above 40 in one season with the Yankees. But now at this point, 20% strikeout rate, 11% swinging strike rate. It's just not somebody that I really want to trust at the back end of the pen. Their ages are similar. Garcia is actually a year older. So I don't know that either one is like the closer of the future. But for today, as of right now, I think Yimi Garcia probably does end up with the majority of the saves on this team. If they do sign Carlos Estevez, that would be for the purpose of using him as a closer, I would imagine, because he has been a closer the last several years and been a pretty effective one. Another guy who kind of skates by the advanced metrics, but he has had success. But if they're bringing him in, it's likely for the ninth inning. So those shares of Garcia and Green would likely both be dead if they do bring in Estevez. But Toronto signing somebody at this point, it's almost like a joke. Is Toronto actually going to sign a player? I don't know. So I think as of right now, it's Garcia, and I'm going to be drafting him as if he is the closer going forward.
Yeah, it's a great ADP for Garcia, even if he just splits the role. That's phenomenal in the DC. It's funny because Chad Green's is like 150 picks ahead of him. Carlos Estevez is 50 picks ahead of Chad Green at around 250. So the guy that doesn't even have a job yet, it goes higher than both of them. Is very interesting, but I'm with you on Garcia. I think he's one that at that ADP, he's that kind of guy that's awesome to speculate on late in DCs. That just give me a handful, go out there and do your thing, and we'll see where it goes. Any other pitchers of note we should pay attention to? I think we can give up on Ricky Tiedemann for now. Yeah. Anybody else in Toronto?
Tiedemann is an interesting one, and I saw, I believe it was James Anderson or somebody tweet this recently. It's like, why the hell are people drafting Ricky Tiedemann?
Yep.
I know it's not a ton of rooms. It's not every single draft. He's not going terribly early, but he had Tommy John in July. He's not pitching this year. It's not happening. And if he does, maybe you get one or two starts in September. Maybe it's not worth drafting. So yeah, Ricky Tiedemann.
He's been drafted in four of the last 12 drafts we've been using ADP for. That's insane. A third of the drafts.
I don't know. It's essentially like throwing away a pick. It's just based on the name value. Oh, Ricky Tiedemann, he's a top prospect. I'll take him round 50 short. But if you look into it, I don't think there's really much out of him this year. It's the same thing with Alek Manoah, our dearly departed Alek Manoah, I don't think there's really much there. Maybe he can come back next season strong, but I think in terms of the pitchers, we've kind of covered them. Jake Bloss is somebody that maybe can have a little bit of value. He's projected to make 15 starts by Steamer, but not a ton of strikeouts. I think that the command could be an issue if you look at throughout his time in the minors, relatively walking more than 10% of batters throughout even the lowest levels of the minors. Complex league, 10% walk rate, low A, 16% walk rate. So, I mean, even the guys in the rotation were probably pushing it a little bit in terms of fantasy value. The AAA guys, maybe you get a couple summer starts where you can stream them, but it's not looking great for Toronto. I said it yesterday. I think they're like a 73-win team, and that might be optimistic.
Yeah, Bloss has an ADP of 724, so he's been a guy I've looked at late, because it's if you're a believer that Uriel is not going to do it, then Bloss seems to be the next man up since they traded for him in that low Perfido deal. And the Astros had high expectations for him. You mentioned, obviously, the control issues have been an issue for a while, but it's one of those, if you can just hang out with some of these veteran pitchers, maybe something can change. Who knows? I'm just always optimistic on these darts, but we'll see. I think maybe one share. I'm not going all out for Jake Bloss, but yeah. I did look into him at one point in time. So that is the question I always finish the show with. What are your expectations for 2025? You're thinking 73 wins. That's last place in the AL East.
Yeah, I think they're going to be the last place team in the AL East. I was kind of going through the different win over and under totals yesterday, just doing my own little thing, and they're at 76.5, I think, in most books, maybe some of them at 75, 77, but 76.5 is the win total I saw. I don't see how this team wins 77 games. I think that the pitching is all on the downward trajectory, even if I think that maybe you get a decent year out of Gausman, maybe you get a decent year out of Berríos. They're not at their peak anymore. Bassett is far from it. The bottom two guys in the rotation, complete wild cards, essentially, Francis and Rodriguez. The lineup stinks, if we're being completely honest here. The lineup is a joke. The lineup is awful. If you have Will Wagner projected as your cleanup hitter, I mean, Bubba, when we first did this show in 2022 or whenever it was like, oh, yeah, you know, Semien, Teoscar, Vladdy, Bo, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell happened there? There's no support in this lineup. So I think they are the bottom feeding team in the American League East. I think that even 73 might be overly optimistic. Maybe they get to 70 wins, 72, but it's going to be bad. And it'll probably be the last year of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in Toronto, almost certainly, considering the insulting offers they send him. Bo is probably going to be gone. The pitching is going to need to be redone. They have a bottom five system in baseball. So I think next year, Bubba, we're going to probably need to have some seriously heavy drinks on hand for this preview, because Toronto is in for a pretty dark stretch.
I'll make sure not to book you and Mike Carter with the White Sox back to back. You'll space it out for the listeners. But I guess the other thing I'll ask, since you mentioned it, I think you're right, it's the end of the Bichette Guerrero era in Toronto. But you also mentioned the farm system. Are these guys getting traded this year? If you had to imagine, like, I know in a perfect world you trade them for prospects and start rebuilding now. Do you think it actually happens though?
I don't think the front office is competent enough to pull together a deal. Well, maybe they are, but if they do make a trade, I'm not 100% sure if it's going to happen yet, but it will be underwhelming. Toronto is not going to get the package that they should get, especially for Guerrero. Guerrero, as a guy who is still 26 years old, or if he's even turned 26 yet, he is going to be probably a Hall of Fame player based on the way that he has started out his career. I don't know that they're going to be able to capture that in the trade market, especially in his walk year. Are you going to be able to get a Juan Soto type of package where you get Abrams and Gore? And like, I don't think that's happening. So you're probably getting like a Kyle Tucker-esque package where maybe you get one top prospect back and a position player or somebody who can slot into the lineup right away. But I don't think it's going to be great. Will they trade him? I'm going to say probably not. I'm going to say Toronto is going to go down with the ship and they're going to be the captain of the Titanic here. and they are going to go into the offseason with Vladdy and try and offer him some $400 million contract, and he is going to walk to the Red Sox, the Yankees, whatever team. And then we're going to be really sad. But yeah, I think that either way, he's gone. Bichette, maybe not as certain because his trade value isn't what it was a year ago. If he lights the world on fire and is hitting 330 through the All-Star break, then they probably should try and trade him because these guys aren't going to want to come back. There's no reason for them to want to come back. There's nothing for the future. There's nothing as of today that shows that they can win this year. So I think we're heading toward a pretty dark path for those guys. And then I wonder what the team will look like next year. Who's at first? Who's at short? Who's starting on opening day? All big questions for 2026.
Well, looking forward to seeing how that unfolds and talking with you along the way on other shows and eventually this one again next year to really soak it all in. But before we head out of here, my friend, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
First off, Bubba, as always, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a great thrill to talk with you. We've done a lot of shows. We've co-hosted shows together, and it's always a blast, man. You can find me over at Fantasy Pros doing a lot of stuff over there behind the scenes that you don't get to see. But if you're ever listening to Fantasy Pros podcast, there's a good chance that I tinkered with it behind the scenes or had some role in it anyway, even on the football side. I know that we're not talking football here, but baseball's coming back. And the baseball podcast has been back for a while at Fantasy Pros. We've done mock drafts. We've done previews. Welsh just did a New Year's resolution show the other day. And then we're really going to start ramping it up with at least weekly podcasts throughout the end of January and February. Bubba will almost certainly be on at least one or two of those. So check out the Fantasy Pros feed. And then I'm also doing some work over at Fangraphs, the second base rankings you can check out over on their site. And then potentially you'll see me on the Sleeper in the Bust a few times this year. Still kind of working through what that role is going to be like. But yeah, Joe Arrico 99 on Twitter, or if you're on the Blue Skies, that is where you can find all my work.
Awesome. Yeah, for some reason you're not already following him, fix that. But I'm pretty sure you are by now if you're listening to this show. But yeah, as always, a pleasure, my friend. And we'll do this again sooner rather than later. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 714, your 2025 Toronto Blue Jays team preview. Catch you all next time.